This is WMUK's West to Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, the state director of the Michigan chapter of the Sierra Club discusses pipeline safety after officials announced last week that a small leak was recently discovered in an Enbridge energy pipeline in the Straits of Mackinac. But first, students in Kalamazoo County now have a new option, which allows them to take an extra year of high school in order to advance in college or earn an associate's degree or a certificate. We're going to discuss the early middle college program with Kalamazoo Valley Community College Dean of Health and Sciences, Jim Taylor, and also Deb Miller, Executive Director of Education for Employment for the Kalamazoo Regional Educational Services Agency. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Let's begin by having you explain, how does early middle college work?
Well, how early middle college will work is it's an opportunity for all the high school students in Kalamazoo County, generally speaking, starting with the 10th grade, and students will begin with a college success strategies course and start building in their schedule courses that are college courses, whether on the high school campus or dual enrollment over on KVCC campus. And they'll start out possibly in 10th grade, one or two courses along with their own high school courses. As it builds into the junior year, they'll have a few more courses under their belt, either on the high school campus through Education for Employment, Education for the Arts, or again, on KVCC's campus. And as it progresses in grade 12, you'll see that at least half of the day will be composed of Kalamazoo Valley Community College courses. So by the time they're in grade 13, their whole schedule will be totally Kalamazoo Valley Community College courses.
And there are some real advantages to the site types of issues that a lot of the research indicates that they describe it as the power of the site. That when high school students start showing up on a college campus, there is a bit of a change that takes place in their behavior. We hear from students that are currently doing this, that they go from their high school to our college site for courses, and then they really don't want to go back to their high schools because, interestingly enough, they feel that the students are more serious about learning. There's a maturation process that goes with that. And whenever you're talking to anybody about a middle college type of initiative, they will describe this power of the site as being an extremely important piece, and that's what this program has built into it.
Perhaps the students are growing up just a little bit quicker than they might otherwise.
Yes.
You mentioned that this can start in 10th grade. So by 10th grade, do you have to make the decision that you're going to go ahead with early middle college?
That is correct. Generally speaking, I notice I keep saying generally speaking, it is 10th grade. However, if a student chooses an 11th grade and possibly even 12th grade, there still is an opportunity. The opportunity would not necessarily have them reach to full potential of a two-year degree or a one-year certificate if they start later. Because the current round is in 10th grade through grade 13th, there is that potential of a two-year degree.
And what we see right now is we have students right now with some of our partnering schools that they did not make the decision in the 10th grade that they were going to do this, but yet we're still engaging them in college-level courses. So they may, as you know, Deb has already said, they may not get the full degree's worth, but they are getting some organized college courses.
Where is this available right now? Who are the students that are able to take advantage?
Well, right now it's dual enrollment that's on the high school campuses and at KVCC. So as far as what students take advantage, it's those students that have alternatively sought courses beyond their high school day that have been accepted into taking these college classes. When the early middle college opens up, we hope to open it up to whatever student is interested in that two-year degree or that one-year certificate, any of the certificate of achievements that we have, the opportunity will be there for them to partake.
Let me ask, who will be able to take advantage of early middle college, and when will they be able to do that? Kalamazoo County, will it be any student in Kalamazoo County?
Any student in Kalamazoo County. Currently, it is within the 9 public high school districts, 11 public high schools in Kalamazoo County, and technically speaking, we'll be making this available to all. There is a parent-student agreement that will need to be completed, and they'll have to take the Compass assessment, enroll in the College Success Strategies course, which is all about building the academic, social, study skills, preparing them for the higher level of the college courses.
Is this something that students are probably going to be interested in, or that their parents are likely to be interested in, because of concerns about the cost of higher education and students who do go through college, graduating, and then ending up with a lot of debt of loans that they have to repay?
I think the first thing that's going to get the parents' attention is exactly what you've just described, is the ability to take college courses at no cost to them. I think that'll get the parents' attention. Hopefully, the secondary message that parents will get in this process, though, is, again, the research has shown that students will very definitely benefit from this kind of a program. Students that get into these types of programs perform better than students that are not in these programs. They complete college at a higher rate than students that are not in these programs. And their academic performance is stronger than students who are not in these types of programs. So I think what the parents will grasp first is the cost benefit in doing it. And then what we're really hoping to see is the performance metrics of these students having higher success rates and things of that nature.
Students have an option of completing an associate's degree through this path, correct? So they could have an associate's degree after this 13th year of school?
That's correct. Right now, what we have is we have 7 programs that we're starting with. One of them is an Associate of Arts, Liberal Arts, intended to be a transfer type of program. KRESA, KVCC have jointly built this program around the Michigan Transfer Agreement standards, which will allow students to take advantage of that pretty much wherever they go. We've certainly worked very closely with Western in this process to make the program extremely compatible. There's still a couple of fine details that parents will need to be aware of. If your goal is to have your son or daughter get into a particular college, you know, let's say the College of Business here at Western, there may be some additional coursework that is going to be necessary for them to do that. So it may not be a direct connection, but certainly there is going to be a very strong connection in those types of courses and programs.
Besides the Associate in Arts degree, we are working with our Economic Pipeline and Education for Employment courses and Education for the Arts courses, and looking in offering the 2-year degree and or certificate in the manufacturing, machine tool area, welding, graphic design, and PC support technician. So we're opening up opportunities in the occupational areas besides just the Associate in Arts or Science.
And then, Deb, the long-range plans of the programming, would you like to briefly describe where you're going in the long run?
In the long run, all of our Education for Employment programs are currently aligned and articulate with 2-year degrees at KVCC and the majority of them and other colleges. But predominantly, we are hoping our goal is to have every single EFE program that is already articulated with KVCC, that will turn into a program of study for a 2-year degree and a 1-year certificate, so that students that are in any EFE course have that potential of completion with KVCC.
I was just talking with parents of a high schooler recently. I have a few years to go before I have to worry about high schoolers, and they were describing senioritis. And I suppose to some students, they think that 4 years of high school seems like a lot. 5 seems like more than you want to ever do in a lifetime. Is that 13th year, that extra year of high school, going to be a very different experience for them in such a way that it seems like they have started something new as opposed to just continuing something that they've been doing?
Absolutely. Right now, the issue of senioritis, I mean, by the time a student gets to be a senior in high school, they've pretty much established their academic performance. In their junior year, they take their ACT exams that are used for college admissions. Their GPA has been established for their college application. So that last year of high school, part of the senioritis issue, you know, some researchers have described it as a wasted year, that the student has already built their academic capita to go to college. And so now in that last year, what we do may not have as much of an impact. What the early middle college is going to do is that 13th year will, maybe technically they're still in high school, but in reality, they're going to be on the college campus taking college courses. And so I think it'll be drastically different compared to what students are experiencing right now.
Does this represent what we might call the stretching of public education? I think that was a quote I saw from Kay Reese's superintendent, was that, you know, we're talking more about early childhood education for students before kindergarten, and now we're talking about a little bit sort of the back end after high school.
Cradle to career.
Yeah.
Well, it's not only a stretching of the academic experience, but I think it's really going, I mean, it's going to change the landscape of education. A lot of the things that are going to be done very early in this process are going to be some assessment-based types of activities in which will actually function as an early alert system, which will objectively, using college metrics, tell the student, the school system, how strongly their students are actually performing. You know, one of the challenges that we have in higher ed is, you know, roughly 60% of the students that come to us need help in at least one subject area, math being one of the most common ones. It's my belief right now that as this system begins to evolve, we will see students coming to us in that 13th year, which normally would just be their first year of college, but we'll be seeing them in that 13th year, and we'll see them stronger, performing stronger in the basic academic skills because of the programming that they'll be put through this journey.
And they will certainly be more focused. Right now, we have many freshman-level status going to college with no focus or clue of what they truly, why they're in college. These students will have a focus and a pathway already determined.
More college ready if they go
more
through something like
ready.
This. Are there other places, Michigan or even other states, where there are similar programs that have been successful and have worked? And have you tried to pattern after those?
Yes, there are about 30, I believe, in the state of Michigan, 30-plus early middle colleges in the state of Michigan, and the data research has proven very successful for students. Great success rates of attaining anywhere from 30 to 60 plus credit hours through grade 13 in this model. And some are early colleges, some are middle colleges. As far as a model that we're looking to match, I don't believe how we're structuring the model in Kalamazoo County is out there yet. So they're all pretty much 9th or 10th grade through grade 13. But what we hope to do in Kalamazoo County is shape it like education for employment and education for the arts, where we could possibly share some of these classes either on KVCC campus where they would go directly, or if we're running, say, English 150 on Schoolcraft campus, there's a potential of having Comstock students and Vicksburg students all joining in and filling that course on that campus with a transportation hub system that's already in place for EFE and EFA. So the model of sharing classes throughout the county is not one that we've seen with early middle college that we would like to create.
And, you know, and I agree with you, Deb. I think you're plowing some new ground here. This program is very definitely different from some of the other programs. I mean, we're still allowing the high schools in this process to have some degree of autonomy as they move students through it. There's a lot of individualized decisions that they need to make on how they're going to be working with their students. And because there is not a central building within the county that's used for this process, that there are going to be classes offered at, for those high schools that wish to do it this way, there will be classes offered, different classes, potentially offered at each high school, using college personnel to help in the instructional process. And that's a little bit of a different model as well. Most of the models that are out there on middle colleges and early colleges tend to function a lot around a central site. There eventually will become a central site when they get to that grade 13, but through those earlier years, it's a lot of work within their own schools. I mean, they basically transition from the high school to the college by starting with classes in high school in a familiar environment, and then progressively work their way to that 13th year where they're now exclusively on the college campus.
Deb Miller and Jim Taylor, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having us.
Deb Miller is Executive Director of Education for Employment for the Kalamazoo Regional Educational Services Agency, and Jim Taylor is Dean of Health and Sciences for Kalamazoo Valley Community College. More information about the Early Middle College program can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. A small leak in a pipeline running through Michigan's Upper Peninsula released an unknown amount of natural gas into the atmosphere recently. State officials say that the leak came from a pipeline owned by Enbridge Energy, the company whose pipeline ruptured in 2010 near Marshall, spilling hundreds of thousands of tar sands oil into the Kalamazoo River. The latest leak has raised new concerns about pipeline safety in Michigan. And Y. Woody is State Director of the Michigan Chapter of the Sierra Club. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Gordon. I appreciate it.
How concerned should the public be about this latest leak?
I think the leak is just another reminder that we have a 61-year-old pipeline that's crossing the Upper Peninsula, crossing the Straits of Mackinac, the Lower Peninsula, and heading into Canada under the St. Clair River, that has never gone through any comprehensive environmental review, and that is, while they caught this so-called pinhole leak, it is hard to have confidence that this pipeline is actually safe or that it will remain safe indefinitely. And I think the residents of Marshall and those who live along the Kalamazoo River understand better than anyone else in the state of Michigan that assurances that a pipeline is safe can't be taken at face value. It has to be thoroughly investigated. The public needs to have a chance to understand the full implications. And the real question is whether this kind of pipeline is appropriate, particularly across the Straits of Mackinac at all.
If not across the Straits of Mackinac, where do you put a pipeline where it would not present some sort of public health risk if it were to rupture?
Well, the first step that I think we in Sierra Club and many of the organizations that are asking for a thorough review of this think needs to happen is the question of whether, in fact, we need to be pumping so much oil into this region at all, whether we should instead be moving much more aggressively towards renewable energy and reducing our consumption of the oil that's coming through these pipelines. As was learned in the case of the spill in Marshall, there's the local effects of a spill can be devastating, but the mining of the tar sands that is happening in Alberta, and it's not clear whether tar sands are coming through this line 5, which is the one that's running through the UP and into the lower peninsula, whether those are tar sands or coming from just regular crude oil. The environmental impact of these mining operations, these drilling operations, the processing and the burning of the fuels are devastating. And this is the time for us to be reconsidering whether, in fact, we should be creating an opportunity for the use of more fossil fuels or not, moving forward with coming up with alternatives. So I go back before the question of whether where the pipeline should run and ask the question of whether we need this oil to be running through here.
But I guess there's going to be, at least for the foreseeable future, oil coming through this part of Michigan. Is there a place to put pipelines that would be better than through the Straits of Mackinac, better than the Kalamazoo River? I mean, is there any place that you think would be more acceptable for an oil pipeline?
That's a really hard question to answer, because there are a number of other pipelines in this region and some new ones being proposed in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and into Illinois. And certainly we're very conscious of the Great Lakes and the concern about the Great Lakes. So any tributaries into the Great Lakes raise tremendous concerns. But there are no really good places to put pipelines that have the potential to cause spills. And one of the other things that really needs to be looked at is are the designs that are being used adequate to protect wherever they're put? And that's one reason why this line, like the 6B line, which was just replaced only after the spill occurred, after the devastation occurred, that are they adequate to meet even the minimal standards that should be there for protecting the environment? Do we know if their systems for monitoring are adequate? Obviously, that was the major problem with the line in Marshall, that detection occurred and no action was taken. So while we see an enhanced concern at this point and identification of a leak in a weld, which raises concerns right there because there will be a lot of welds on these, we don't have a clear assurance. We don't have a public discussion where the public has a chance to learn and know enough about what's in the designs of these to feel confident. And I think even though there's no good place for a pipeline, I think there's no one who would think that placing this pipeline or keeping this pipeline across the Straits of Mackinac makes sense. It is considered to be one of the most vulnerable places to have put such a large pipeline like this. The examination of water currents and this connection between two of the largest lakes in the world that are freshwater and provide for drinking water and fisheries really has to be called into question. And I think when it was put in 60 years ago, no one was thinking about those issues.
Is that another issue, the fact that the pipeline is 60 years old? Should we be allowing pipelines to reach that age before they get replaced?
Right. I think that is another question. And one of the things that Sierra Club has been seeking is for environmental review to occur of both where the pipeline is, where it's located, as well as the potential that it could cause problems. And it crosses not just the waterways, but it crosses public lands, including federal public lands. And the Huron-Manistee National Forest in the northern lower peninsula has a significant stretch of the Line 5 pipeline across it. They've just been going through a re-permitting of the pipeline, and we asked, has there ever been an environmental review done of this pipeline, and asked that there be one conducted. And at this point, the Forest Service is not willing to proceed with that, but we think that's the kind of thing that ought to be happening now, because that would allow for the public to weigh in, allow for independent scientific sources, conservationists, people from the local communities to actually weigh in and have some kind of input as to whether this is, whether the risk that this pipeline poses is something that we as a society are willing to accept.
Is part of that risk the idea that any pipeline, if you have enough miles of pipeline running through the Great Lakes or wherever else, that eventually one or more of them is going to leak, one or more of them is going to rupture? I mean, is that part of the risk calculus that you're talking about there?
Oh, yes. It absolutely is. And the National Wildlife Federation and others have done extensive documentation about the leaks that have occurred throughout this region. And there have been many that were not as big as the one in Marshall, but did have local devastating impacts that have not been drawn to public attention. And I think the question isn't whether there will be a leak. The question is when and where. And that's why the risk issues really have to be thoroughly weighed. It's why a pipeline that crosses the Ausable River, the St. Clair River, and goes through, you know, many other waterways really has to be very carefully studied, not just because it crosses the Straits of Mackinac, but because at each of these locations, the potential for irreversible harm to the environment and to public health is a great concern.
The news release, which was put out by your group, the Sierra Club Michigan chapter, after this leak was discovered and was made public, said that this small leak should serve as a wake-up call. What would responding to this small leak in a way that showed that people were taking it seriously, what would that look like?
There are a few things. Again, the environmental review that we've called for is something that we think needs to happen along the full length of the pipeline. And that means looking at all the risk, looking at the actual pipeline itself, whether there's need to begin to replace or remove it, and also provides for the public to have input. There's a task force that's been put together at the state level, and we are part of the Oil and Water Don't Mix Coalition, which is asking the state to thoroughly examine whether it's meeting its duties under state law to protect the Straits of Mackinac in particular. And that's something that is happening, unfortunately, in sort of a behind-the-scenes setting. The meetings are not public, and only invited testimony is being sought. Certainly that ought to be opened up to the public, and a robust public discussion about the state's role ought to be occurring. And we think we need to be seeing Enbridge and any other pipeline company being held to an extremely high standard. It's good that they caught this so-called pinhole leak, but what's the status of all the other welds that may have similar leaks that may not have been identified?
Do you believe that there are many other places in the state right now which are at risk of some sort of a pipeline rupture or leak?
I think what we learned with the Line 6B rupture in Marshall was that when that happened, suddenly it became apparent that there were many more problems in that line that had the potential to eventually rupture. There were many dents, many bumps, et cetera. And only after a disaster occurred did Enbridge move forward with actually acknowledging those problems and beginning to replace the pipeline. So I think the lack of knowledge is probably the worst thing here. This is not a situation where ignorance is bliss, because as we learned along Kalamazoo River, the costs of ignorance are extremely high.
N.Y. Woody, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
N.Y. Woody is State Director of the Michigan Chapter of the Sierra Club. Beginning January 5th, you'll have another opportunity to hear West Southwest on Mondays and Thursdays. In addition to our 9:30 broadcast, we'll have a replay at 3:30 Monday and Thursday afternoons on 102.1 FM. You can always find interviews and more from West Southwest at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.